He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Bruce Jenner.
Come on, Shania. Million things to talk about today, folks. Shania Twain giving you a big hint that the sex change pending for Kim Kardashian's stepfather, the Olympic gold medal winning Bruce Jenner. I mean, what's up with that? I mean, did he do it just for the reality show? I mean, the Bruce Jenner I know, Marty, you work with him. I don't know where this comes from, but we'll talk about it with those in the know as we watch a person who was the greatest male athlete on earth in 1976, now becoming a woman on reality television. And I just hope it's not the reality television driving the transformation rather than the other way around.
I mean, that'd be shocking to think that somebody would go through that for reality TV. Somebody like Bruce Jenner doesn't need to do something like that.
Well, you know, it's a big payday.
Well, it would be a huge payday. People want to see it, right?
Who wouldn't? I'll never forget doing that sex change story on 2020. Was it 2020? It was a daytime show. And we went out to Colorado. We went and we followed a guy who was becoming a woman. And there was a very squeamish producer. What was his name? Bill Lancaster out of Massachusetts. He was with us and he really couldn't stand the whole notion of it. I mean, the physicality of was something that totally grossed him out. And so I remember as John went in to become Janet, I went to Bill Lancaster, who was waiting outside. He couldn't go inside. I was inside in the procedure, and I came outside and I said, "Here, Bill, Jack wanted you to have these," and I handed him these two cherry apples that I had picked from a tree there. Anyway.
So you watched the snip snip part?
I watched the whole snip snip. Okay. I'll tell you. It gave me, you know, you talk about cold water does to your external parts. Yeah. So I had to watch that. It's pretty gross. Hi, everybody. 9 minutes after 10 o'clock. A lot of serious things to talk about. We have had this morning, aside from yesterday afternoon, having great earnings reports from some very big Wall Street companies. We also today got the report that the lowest number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment in 15 years was just registered. The lowest number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment in 15 years. Now, I don't know what the damn market is doing. I don't understand a thing about it. But, the way Wall Street works, sometimes good news is bad news. So I maybe this means they're going to increase interest rates, and maybe that's why stocks are less valuable. I have no idea. But let me start someplace where that is no doubt. This is not my intended consequence, because I want you to love me. I need you to love me. I need you to really care for the old Geraldo that you have known all these many years. But I cannot begin to tell you how angry I am at Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's disrespectful decision to go behind President Obama's back and secretly accept this deceitful invitation from the Republican Speaker of the House, John Boehner, to address the Congress of the United States. You know why? Because it comes down to something very fundamental in the constitutional setup. And all the Republicans and conservatives always squawking about the President of the United States exceeding his constitutional boundaries. How about this? How about the Speaker of the House taking over the foreign policy of the United States? This is the most flagrant abuse of constitutional power in recent years. Who runs America's foreign policy? I really think that this decision by the Prime Minister, Bibi Netanyahu, is very disrespectful. To go behind President Obama's back to secretly accept this invitation, this deceitful invitation from John Boehner, it's an insult to every American. It is a slap in the face, not just to Barack Obama. He's going to be gone in 2 years anyway, less. Not a slap in the face to the Democrats in the Congress. It's the slap in the face to everyone listening, every American. Under our Constitution, foreign affairs are conducted by the president, however popular or unpopular he is. It's not the Congress. It is clear, I get it, that many legislators, Republican and Democrat, want the president to take a tougher stance against Iran on the issue of sanctions designed to get that rogue nation to abandon its nuclear policy and its program to develop a nuclear weapon. I get it. Many want him to be tougher. But to invite a foreign leader, Bibi Netanyahu, I got news for you. He's a foreign leader. To invite him, in effect, to come to Washington, D.C. to undermine our president on the world stage is absolutely intolerable. Can you even imagine any other world leader, any other world leader, any other previous Israeli prime minister, any of them? Can you imagine them accepting an invitation like this to come to Washington just to embarrass and pressure the president of the United States? How would you feel if Congress invited Putin, let's say, to make a speech against the Ukraine sanctions, or the Mexican or the Irish or the Philippine president to make a speech complaining about deportations or our drug policies? Or the Chinese president to come and complain about human rights policies or tariffs on consumer electronics or whatever. Or the prime minister of Sierra Leone or Liberia to come to complain about travel restrictions in Ebola-ravaged West Africa. If you, like me, are a Republican, let me ask you this. How would you feel back in 2002 if the anti-war Democrats, and most of the Democrats in Congress were anti-war in 2002, if they had gone behind the back of George W. Bush and invited Saddam Hussein to complain about the hype over the weapons of mass destruction? Saddam Hussein was right. He had no weapons of mass destruction. So what if those Democrats in Congress who were so opposed to the war, what if they invited them to come address the Congress of the United States? This is not about Israel. This is not even about Iran or the nuclear weapons or the nuclear policy. This is an arrogant intrusion by an Israeli politician driven by a Republican Speaker of the House who's trying to score cheap political points. Bibi Netanyahu is in the midst of a hotly contested election back in Israel, and he is using and abusing the gross partisan divide in the United States of America to gain a political advantage in his own election. This is about manners. This is about protocol, and shame on the Israeli ambassador down in Washington, a guy who is a Republican operator of the New York Times says, not that everything the New York Times says is correct, but is this guy, is he representing Israel? Was he representing the Republicans? Who's he representing, this ambassador? This is about protocol, manners, shame on these people for trying to game the system. Shame on Bibi Netanyahu for accepting this tainted clandestine invitation. Shame on Speaker Boehner for sneaking around in the shadows of the Capitol looking to embarrass this lame duck president who, like I said, is going to be gone in 2 years anyway. The bottom line is, you know who gets hurt by this? Ladies and gentlemen, you know who gets hurt? What gets hurt by this? It's the principle that the United States-Israel relationship is so strong, so fundamental, that it soars above the petty bullcrap of Washington politics. That principle is what has been damaged by this action. I call on Bibi to reassess his decision to accept this invitation. I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but I do agree that he loves his country, he loves the Jewish people. He wants the best for all of us. He wants us to be strong and to survive. This doesn't help that process. Do you think it does? Do you think this makes the Israel-American relationship stronger? Is this a good idea? As my mother would say, is this good for the Jews? I'll take your calls when I come back. 16 after.
Geraldo, live, local, today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
23 minutes after 10 o'clock, I have been extremely critical this morning of both the Prime Minister of Israel's decision to accept an invitation to address Congress, a secret invitation, and especially the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, for offering that clandestine, sneaky invitation. This is undermining not President Obama, the person. This is the office of the presidency, the Constitution of the United States. This is wrong, and it hurts the Israeli-American fundamental principled relationship that should be above partisan politics. What do you think? 866-ERALDO, the lines have been ringing off the hook ever since I opened my mouth. Here's James in Long Island. James, what are you thinking about today? My button's not working, Crash. Hello, James.
Yes, Geraldo, good morning. Listen, I love you, Geraldo, and I always will, but I disagree with you. President Obama has been treating the prime minister like garbage since he's been elected to office. You have to agree with that.
Dude, who said, who endorsed Mitt Romney in the election for president of the United States? You know who endorsed him? Bibi Netanyahu endorsed Mitt Romney. I mean, that happen. The Irish prime minister doesn't endorse a candidate. The Spanish prime minister doesn't endorse a candidate. You don't endorse a candidate. Obama didn't endorse Bibi's rival in Israel. Israel is Israel. America is America.
The president of the United States doesn't go around bowing to people either and kissing their hands.
That's a different. If you got a beef with the president of the United States, you take it up with the president of the United States. You don't say to the Saudi, prime minister, come on, it's not about, don't you get it? How would you feel if it was Saddam Hussein in 2002? He was right? Saddam Hussein was absolutely right. He didn't have any weapons of mass destruction. What if the Democrats, you know how fervently anti-war they were? What if they said, wait a second, I understand President George W. Bush says that, they got this problem with weapons of mass destruction, but the guy on the other end, he's going to come to Congress and tell them, come on, Congress, come. I invite you, 1,000 of you, to come and inspect my country. There's nothing here. How would you have felt then? Annie. Hi, Annie in the Bronx.
Hi, Geraldo. Wow. I could tell you how it feels when you say, how would it feel if such and such came? I felt horrible when the Muslim Brotherhood came over to the White House without the consultation of Congress. I felt horrible.
What Muslim Brotherhood? What are you talking about?
Hello, can I finish?
You can finish. You gotta talk facts here, not nonsense.
I'm talking fast. What about when he slithered over towards Medvedev on a hot mic and sold us out, saying after he wins the elections, he would talk about matters of safety? I know how it feels when Pelosi went over to Syria over President Bush's head, and that was an enemy. Here we have a man who is knowledgeable about Iran, who can work with us, congruously work with us. I can't even speak. I'm so upset. And this is what you get upset about? Why weren't you angry when Muslim Brotherhood came here? Why
you keep talking about the Muslim Brotherhood. I don't know what you're talking about. Annie, I don't know what you're talking about today. It's Laura in Harlem. Hey, Laura.
Geraldo. First of all, let me make this clear. The president of the United States, when he's wrong, he's wrong. Because I'm black, I'm not a liberal, number one, so I have disagreed with many of his decisions. But this is the bottom line, Geraldo. When Charlie Rangel, another person that I'm not always on board with, when Charlie Rangel made that comment in terms of the racism that going, he sat for 45 years, Geraldo, with the Congress, 45 years. And when he made that comment in terms of the racism that going on, this is proof of the pudding. You have a segment of white America that feels that they are privileged, and anything that's done to this president, whether it's negative, he's not put on the same level as the rest of the presidents, and you know that.
Okay, Laura, I got it. I understand. Laura's point is he's disrespected because he's black. I don't agree with that. But here's Patricia in New York. Hi, Patricia.
Oh, hi, Geraldo. You know what? You really got me up this morning because I cannot believe you're talking about this president regarding shame, regarding protocol, regarding affecting an election when he stood up there and advocated in public the overthrow of President Mubarak of Egypt, who was a duly elected president, and tried to do his best to keep the Muslim Brotherhood in power. So to talk about this as being...
But that was a mistake.
It was obviously.
Let me finish, Patricia.
Okay.
That was a mistake. I'm very upset here. That was a mistake to endorse the Arab Spring with the vigor that he did with that speech in Cairo. But that's his constitutional duty. Foreign affairs, world affairs, that's the constitutional duty of the executive branch of the government of the United States. To conduct foreign affairs is his job. It's not Speaker Boehner's job. And it's certainly not Bibi Netanyahu's job. This doesn't help Israel. This is done to stick it in the eye of Barack Obama. Do you think that this is going to strengthen our position vis-a-vis Iran and nuclear weapons? Did you read the papers today? You had 10 senators who were going to vote for increasing the sanctions against Iran now say they're going to withhold their votes until after the Israeli election, until after the meetings going on in Europe. This hurt the whole movement to increase sanctions against Iran. It didn't help it. And you know, now, just like on this program, on 77 WABC, we're talking about Bibi Netanyahu coming to stick it in the eye of Barack Obama. We're not talking about Iran and nuclear weapons and world peace. We're talking about politics. This is politics. Low down and dirty politics. Does anyone listening today think that this entire controversy is helping Israel? If you are, then you're blind to the facts out there. The facts are clear. This is a terrible mistake, driven by politics, not policy.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77 WABC.
This is just a coincidence, but yesterday I was invited to the Bronx, where the president of Israel was meeting with the Bronx Borough President, Ruben Diaz Jr. They were having a dialogue on Latino-Jewish relations. And as, one of the most prominent Spanish Jews around, I was invited, but unfortunately I had a Fox Business appearance, and then Hannity show was pre-taping in the afternoon. I couldn't make it. There was a lot of security, as you can imagine, around the Israeli president's, appearance here. So you had to get there early. You had to stay late. I would have missed my television obligations. But I wanted very much to have the Bronx Borough president, a man I am a big fan of, Ruben Diaz Jr., to come on and tell us about the event yesterday. Mr. President, welcome. How you doing?
Thank you, Geraldo. You were truly missed here yesterday. We had a wonderful event.
Tell me about it.
It was a historic day in the Bronx. I mean, to have President Ruben Rivlin visit us. And for the second time in less than a week, I was able to sit with him. You should understand, and the listeners should understand, that I was out in Israel with a delegation of Latinos. There was a cross-section of men and women in business, educators, people from non-for-profit in the civic world, and religious leaders. And we met with the president in his presidential residence last week. And out of that, we were able to have him come and visit the Bronx. As you know, there's a rich history between the Latino community and the Jewish community. And we wanted to bring some light, and we wanted to inform the whole world that relationship has been around for a long time and is going to be around for many more generations to come.
Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz Jr., venturing into the world of international relations a little bit there. Now, what's the bottom line? What, Mr. President, do you want to achieve with meeting with President Rivlin and bringing attention to the Latino-Jewish, the ancient coalition that existed?
Well, look, every time that we read about Israel, we are always concerned, and we pray for peace over there, and there's always the information on the conflict, and we've got to continue to monitor that and show support for the state of Israel. But when we went over there on a daily basis, you see that many of the issues that the government is dealing with are the very same issues that we are dealing with here in the Bronx, and we're dealing in the Latino community.
Give me one example.
For instance, job creation and diversity in the workforce, and how you get more and more women in the workforce, pay equity, education. You know, I visited a school called the Guatemala Primary School. And the reason why they named it the Guatemala Primary School is because many of the schools in Jerusalem are named after the Latin countries that voted in the UN for the creation of the statehood of Israel. And of course, I don't have to tell you how the Bronx has benefited from a solid foundation of a Jewish community here. And still to this day, we have more Jews living in the Bronx than major cities like Houston, than even states like North and South Carolina. And we have Latino pioneers and giants such as yourself that are Puerto Rican and observing Jews, as well as the late, great Herman Badillo.
That's right. I joked that with his widow, Gail, at the funeral, how, you know, I totally understood the whole Jew Rican thing. So it was a lot of fun. So let me ask you, I've been talking about Israel in a different context. I don't want to drag you into that, but I got to ask you who you want to be Speaker of the Assembly before I get back to my callers at 866-RALDO on the other issue. Who do you want to be the Speaker of the Assembly now that Sheldon Silver's gone?
Well, I would hope that it's someone from New York City.
Why is that? Do you really think upstate just doesn't get New York?
No, it's not that. It's that if it's not someone from New York City, if you look at the leadership from the legislature, the Republican and Democrats, be it in the Republican leadership in the Assembly or Democrats and Republicans in the Senate, we would be left out. Every other region of the state of New York is represented there. And if we did not have someone from New York City, we would not have representation and leadership. And I believe that the best person for that job who has shown the temperament, the coalition building, who understands the budget, who understands how to bring people together and has that level of independence is Carl Hastie, Assemblyman Carl Hastie.
So where's his district?
His district is in the Bronx. And I've served with him up in Albany. I've seen his leadership here as the chair of the Democratic Party. He's brought everyone together. Once upon a time in the Bronx politically, we had different factions. The Bronx is more unified than ever, and I think that he can bring that expertise. He's someone who has an MBA, who served on Ways and Means Committee, and was a budget analyst in the New York City Comptroller's Office. So if you're going to have someone who's going to hit the ground running and be able to debate, is going to be able to negotiate with the governor and with the Republican leadership, and maintain that level of interest and focus on for the city of New York, I think that there would be no one better than Carl Hastie.
Ruben Diaz Jr., and one of the reasons I like you is you're not just a Puerto Rican executive. You represent the Bronx, and I like that. I think that you're going to go far. I've said it before. I think you've got a great future.
Gracias, hermano.
Okay, hermano. Hasta pronto. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bronx President Ruben Diaz Jr. Okay, now to your calls. Now you can get mad at me. Here's Mark in Patterson. Hey, Mark, what's up? Frontman, please, crash. Hello, Mark. Yes, Mark. Hey.
Hello?
Hi, you're on. I'm sorry, the phones are kind of screwy.
Hello?
Hi, Mark, you're on.
I'm Mark, I'm Troy.
Well, whoever you are, you're on, Troy.
Is this Geraldo?
Yes, it is, sir.
Very disappointed in you this morning. I can't believe what you're saying. You're comparing Netanyahu to Saddam Hussein?
I'm comparing the issue of a foreign leader coming. I mean, it would be outrageous, Saddam Hussein, right? What if it's the president of France? How would that be?
Well, I think of the president.
The prime minister of Canada?
My question is, if it was the prime minister of France, I wonder if anybody would be saying anything. How do you like that?
You mean if he was invited and there was some issue between France and the United States, you invited the French president to come?
When is this president so up on protocol right now anyway? I mean, what is the concern? So, first off, you know, the congressional body, the strongest.
You know what the concern is, Troy? Here's the concern. The United States has a position in these negotiations with Iran. And the United States is part of a coalition dealing with Iran. There's five nations, plus even Russia is involved. There's a coalition. They talk about amongst themselves what their position is. That's so the Americans have a position with these other nations vis-a-vis Iran. Now comes Israel to talk to the Congress of the United States about a position that's different from the American position. It's not the Obama position. It's the American position. That's what's wrong with it.
Can I talk? This might seem like a silly question. Hello?
Yes, Troy.
Have you been to Israel?
I've been to Israel. I have a Jewish star on my fist. My son was bar mitzvahed in Israel.
Right.
I've been in every war in Israel since 1972. Have you been to Israel?
Yes, I have.
I've been to Israel 100 times more than you. See, if you've got to ask me that question, that's a stupid question. It's a stupid question, an ignorant question. How could you not know how many times I've been to Israel? Not how many times. That Israel is part of my blood. It's just infuriating. Hi, Uda.
Yes, hello. Geraldo, I'm disappointed about your view, too. Our President Obama does not have a foreign policy. Look how rudely he treated Netanyahu in the past. You know that Congress has the equal power in this case.
Not in foreign relations, it doesn't.
Yes, they do. If Obama doesn't step up and have...
You mean if they don't like his position?
He doesn't have a foreign policy. He just goes golfing and flies around in our number A plane. I mean, it's insane. He doesn't have
okay.
any policy.
Uda, I get it. Henry in Brooklyn. Hey, Henry.
Hello.
Everybody is welcome on this show. I mean, that's what makes us different. Everybody is welcome. We love you all. I don't care if you don't like my position on this. You'll like my position on the next issue. Hi, Henry. What's up?
Geraldo?
Hi.
Yes, hi. What's interesting is, I mean, the reason they're doing it is because the president, he is giving amnesty for so many illegal immigrants and acting without Congress. Like, he is Congress. He took away their duties. That's why they're acting, they're taking his duties. If he can do what he wants with his pen and his phone, they're allowed to do whatever they want.
Okay, so Henry says a quid pro quo. President Obama exceeds his constitutional authority, therefore... The Speaker of the House can exceed his constitutional authority. All right, here is from Staten Island, Anthony. Hey, Anthony.
How you doing, Geraldo? I actually agree with you. But the only thing is I have to ask you, how upset were you when the president of Mexico, I believe a couple of years ago, came to Congress to speak and also bashed the United States on their immigration policy?
I don't remember that the president of Mexico addressed Congress behind the back of the president of the United States.
So as long as the president agrees with it, then they can go to Congress.
Yeah, if the president agrees and Congress invites, I mean, I mean, it happens all the time, doesn't it? I mean,
there one voice? Isn't there also one voice with the president?
The problem here is this is a clear, designed insult to the president. John Boehner knew what the protocol was because he's a veteran legislator. He knew. Bibi Netanyahu knew. The ambassador from Israel is actually a U.S.-born citizen, a Republican Party operative. I mean, it wasn't like it was naive. This didn't happen by accident. This was a designed insult. This is a screw you, Obama. We don't need you to make a point to the American people. And the fact that Bibi Netanyahu has an election, how is he doing, by the way, in the election?
Well, funny you should ask. Initially, when they announced that there were going to be another election, that he called for elections, he was ahead. But a new poll out this week, there's this new centrist left-leaning party with two candidates, Tzipi Livni and...
Oh, she was the foreign minister.
She was the foreign minister.
Right.
And Isaac Herzog, whose father was a general in the Israeli army and a president of Israel at one point.
Right.
Their party is now leading by 4 or 5 seats in this latest poll. You know, the way
could they put together a government?
Well, that's, of course, the question. You know, the people vote in these parliamentary elections, but really what goes on is afterwards, all the bargaining between the parties to see who can create a coalition
first. Because
it's
so fragmented.
It is. There's so many parties. But the thought is here, some of the religious parties that normally go with Likud could be convinced to come to this left-leaning centrist party. At least that's what they're saying. They're saying their votes are up for grab. They're not necessarily in Netanyahu's camp.
Let me ask you this. Is it possible to form a government in Israel without the hard right religious parties?
It's rare. And I'd have to think of an instance, and one doesn't come to mind right now anyway, where they've been able to do that, no.
All right, let's talk more about this, and then I'm going to change the subject at the top of the hour and give you a fair warning. But I've got to take a quick intermission right back.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Just a couple of minutes before the commercial, James in Rockland County. Thanks. We've been weighing in on whether or not it was appropriate to invite the Israeli Prime Minister. What's on your mind, James?
Hey, Geraldo. I just think when you have incidents like this, it kind of lets people show their true colors. And, you know, like, for example, during World War II, the Americans would catch the German prisoners, and they would eat in the same mess halls, while you had the American black soldiers would have to eat in separate mess halls. And the point being is this, even though they were fighting and killing each other, they had something in common with the German soldiers more than they did with the fellow American soldiers. So I just think incidents like that, it's inappropriate. And for people to call in and say, oh, it's not, and, you know, it doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, James, very provocative, loaded comment there. That could spark an hour's worth of discussion on its own. But I'm done with this one. We're going to move on to different pastors. Did you know Kris Jenner? And what's this?
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I am woman. So when Bruce Jenner had his Adam's apple shaved down in January of last year, he denied that it was the first step toward gender reassignment surgery, you know, becoming a woman. He told TMZ, I just never liked my trachea. That's what he said. And, you know, Kris Jenner, who split from Bruce back in 2013, I don't watch the show, so I didn't realize this. She said that this talk of Bruce Jenner becoming transgender and getting gender reassigned was just dumb tabloid talk. Decades-old speculation and rumors. Silly. And, you know, similarly dismissing it. Now it seems real. It seems that Bruce Jenner, who was the greatest athlete in the world in 1976 when he won the decathlon, now is apparently becoming a woman and doing it on television. Right?
You might as well, right? That family's done everything else on television. Why not?
Bonnie Fuller, you used to run Us Weekly. Now you have, your hot new website. What's it called again?
Hollywoodlife.com.
Hollywoodlife.com. Welcome, Bonnie. So what's going on?
Well, it appears that this is absolutely the truth, that Bruce Jenner is in the process of becoming a woman, and that he is going to document it in a new docuseries that is being developed for E! And what we're hearing, actually, our sister site Variety broke the news last night that it looks like it's going to be on TV on May or June, so early summer.
So is Bonnie Fuller, HollywoodLife.com, is Bruce Jenner going to become Bruce Gender, say? I don't know.
Well, you know, what we don't know is if he's actually going to finish the process during the taping of the show.
You mean actually have his testicles cut off and surgical stuff like that?
Well, you're being very specific. So we don't know if he's going to complete the process. However, what we are hearing, and this is coming from our own sources at Hollywood Life, plus it's now out in a number of other media places, that he's going to begin the process of transformation. It seems like he's already begun that. You brought up the Adam's apple situation. He's already been growing his hair longer. Apparently he started to take estrogen. He's been getting manicures, and we've seen photos of him with red nail polish, pink nail polish. But that during this docuseries, he's going to be talking about his feelings, talking about how he's wanted to be a woman for many, many years. He's felt as if he was a woman inside, and his family is going to be in the series supporting him. So he's certainly going to be going through the psychological steps and the familial steps with his family, as well as some of the physical steps. Now, whether he completes that transition, we don't know that yet.
Marnie Berman, our executive producer here at 77 WABC, you worked with Bruce before, haven't you, Marty?
I did. I worked on a show called America Alive, which was a live show in the daytime on NBC, and Bruce was one of the correspondents, and we did a lot of remotes together. Number one, he's a terrific guy. I mean, everybody loved him, charming. I remember, so iconic is Bruce and his image that Wheaties brought the box back in 2012.
Really?
Yeah, it was the first time this ever happened.
So the 1976 box of him on the Wheaties cereal was brought back in 2012?
Was reintroduced in 2012.
And so did he ever seem
confused
in his masculinity?
Not at all. He was the world's greatest athlete. I mean, men admired him. Women, you know, just melted in his presence. But he revealed a secret to me, which I've never told until now. And we were working on a story in Wisconsin with a woman who was the first high school football player. And we were getting ready to do the shoot. And I said, Bruce, are you ready? You ready? And he was taking an awful long time preparing the script. I said, Bruce, we have cue cards. There's no problem. You can read the cue cards. And he got real close to me and put his arm around me and said, listen, I'm dyslexic. And I really can't read the cue card, so I have to memorize it. But this was the big secret then.
That when he was dyslexic.
That he was dyslexic, and he had never revealed it to anybody.
Maybe what a letdown. With the sexuality, he's dyslexic. You know, you think he's a...
Right. He looks at his pee-pee and sees something
down,
else.
Yeah.
Talk about deflated balls.
Yeah, deflated balls, right?
Well, you talking know, about deflated balls. Bonnie Fuller, Hollywood Life, yes.
Well, you know, I think that the fact that he's had so much plastic surgery over the years and facial plastic surgery. And I think that everybody just assumed that he had very strong feelings about his appearance. Maybe he was a little vain. But now that this news is coming out that he has felt this way for many years and may have talked about it with Kris Jenner when they were first married, revealed his feelings to her, I think that you look at his plastic surgery in a different light because everything he's done facially does make him look much more feminine from when he was known as the world's greatest athlete.
Well, you know, I got relatively close to Michael Jackson during, 2003, 2004, and 2005 when he was in the jam over the Santa Barbara, the alleged child rape in Santa Barbara. And I have little doubt but that his obsession with plastic surgery was in part related to his own confusion on race. I thought that Michael Jackson was very ambiguous about who he was as a person and as a black man specifically. In yeah. Bruce's case, I guess that's why you keep tinkering and do so in a way that seems, you know, like plastic surgery is everywhere these days, but when you start... When your nose keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller and the Adam's apple gets smaller and smaller and all this other stuff. I mean, it's clear that the guy is searching for something, but then why would Kris Jenner be so dismissive, Bonnie Fuller, of all of these claims heretofore?
Well, we don't know that that's the case. Now, there's we actually have sources saying that she is supportive and that she very much is behind him as a business partner and that she's working with him on this, that he's doing the show on his own. It's at his initiative and that she's not officially a producer, but we've heard that she is involved in some way with the business of the show. And so, you know, the Kardashians and the Jenners are really geniuses when it comes to marketing publicity. And they don't shy away from what other people would think is bad publicity. And so I think that, you know, she could be there could be a storyline that Chris isn't supportive because it adds more elements of drama.
Right, right. I'm convinced that Kim Kardashian married the white basketball player. What was his name?
Oh, right, yes.
What was his
Chris
name?
Chris Humphries,
yeah. Right. Wasn't he a Brooklyn Net?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He was.
Yeah.
I married him just to make a show. And then dumped him, what, 70 hours later,
right.
Or six minutes?
70 days later.
Whatever
well,
it was.
Chris Humphries certainly felt that way. That's why he
did.
Want to give
absolutely.
Her divorce.
And I think that there's definitely a manipulative aspect to everything that they do. Although now that she's laughing at herself, she's become enormously attractive as a commercial spokesperson. And she's really made herself, and her sister is adorable, the little one. Who's on the cover of one of the magazines. I forget which
Kendall.
One. Vogue. Which one?
Oh, Kendall Jenner?
Kendall Jenner, yeah. But I just can't leave this sneaking suspicion that this is all a ploy, that it's not about gender confusion. It's about what I can do to top myself.
Really?
Well, I definitely understand your feelings. I think this, I tend to believe that this is real. These are his feelings. He's had them for a long time, that he's decided that, you know, it would be, as well as a great business, that it would also be wonderful for other people who feel the same way,
we've interviewed every one of them.
I mean,
really, from the
Christian Jorgensen, Rene Richards,
the tennis player.
Yeah. You know, the thing with Bruce is he's been basically a corporate spokesman for the last dozen years. So he's giving up all of that. I mean, that's what he does when he's not on the air. And he's also been a motivational speaker. So I can't imagine that he's doing this
for monetary
reasons.
All right.
I agree. I don't think this is insincere.
Well, you know, wish him the best. Wish him the best. What else can you do?
I agree.
Girls just want to have fun.
Girls just want to have fun. Bonnie Fuller, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
17 minutes after 11 o'clock. We'll be back.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. 24 minutes after 11 o'clock, even though I don't want to, I'm being dragged back into the whole controversy over the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's acceptance of a clandestine invitation to come and address the Congress of the United States. Despite the objections of the President of the United States, kind of dividing the House, divided against itself, all that. So I'll get back to that. One thing I want to mention before I read some emails and get back into that Israeli discussion, and I'll do this briefly because it's kind of a jarring subject change. If you want to criticize President Obama for being kind of ideologically motivated, his whole, and maybe even hypocritical, his whole thing, this whole move he made to cancel the program where you deposited money, where you can deposit right now, you know, people of means, well, actually it applies to everybody, obviously, only if you make money and you get the deduction, does it really matter to you? You can put money away for your kids' college education. In a kind of an IRA type account. You put the money in, and then under the 529 plan, when you took it out, it was not taxed. You could take it. In other words, you could shelter your money as long as you spent it on your kid's college education years from now. You avoided the tax on it. It's a great deal. But the president, and you have one, right? Do you have a 529?
You know, I went to check yesterday. I don't even know. I don't know if I do or not.
You've
but
got
now I'm gonna set one up.
It's a great idea, and it's a wonderful you shelter your income and
right.
You got to pay for your kids' college anyway. And when you pay out of your pocket, you'll see when your kids get older, you're 9 and 11, you're
11 and seven,
11 and seven. So it's going to be there before you know it. I mean, even if you have to pay for, I think this is specifically for college. I don't think it applies for high school or prep school, but, you know, it costs so much money to send a kid through college. I mean, the tuitions are, like at NYU, you could pay $35,000 in tuition plus books plus the dormitory.
Oh, yeah.
Plus all of the fees to everything, every trip they go on.
Plus, they want to do junior year or one semester abroad.
What's the ceiling on this? Is there a ceiling of how much you can put into this account?
I don't know. Here it is. You can contribute $11,000 to the Roth IRA.
Right.
But that is only if you make less than $183,000 a year. This is for people who make more than $150,000. It's been great for relatively high-end people to shelter money, and that's who has the money to spend now. I mean, it's just like the Easy Pass. You know, who gets Easy Pass? It's people who have the money that can afford to pay a month's worth of tolls in one fell swoop, and then they get a discount. So the poor Schlemiel has to pay cash. He plays full retail. He doesn't get the discount. So at the end of the month, he ends up paying more than the rich guy.
A lot more.
It's one of those ironies, bitter ironies in life. This is like that in a sense that they say that the law prevents both the rich and poor from sleeping under the bridge, but it's only the poor who sleeps under the bridge. You know, so it's one of those laws that although it was designed with the best intention to help everybody fund college for their kids, it really mostly benefits upper middle class people who have the money to be able to afford to put the savings account away
now.
Sock it away now.
Yeah.
So Obama tried to abolish it as part of his plan to have free community college for everybody. And everyone who makes over 200 grand a year started howling. You know, I'm not rich. I make 200 grand a year. Well, you make 200 grand a year in the New York area. First of all, make 200 grand. It's really only 100 because that's what you take home. And then you have all these other expenses, plus you pay a high income tax. So they're saying, I make 200,000 a year. I'm not rich. This was one of the few benefits I had where I could shelter some money, not pay the income tax on it now, and then have it around for my kids. So he tried to abolish it. And so everyone was saying, and correctly, what he was doing is he was taking it out of the pockets of the people who make 200 grand a year and giving it to the people who make 20 grand a year. You know, and that kind of income redistribution in the classic socialist, and I'm not using that in a pejorative term, just a statement of fact. It's just what he was doing. He was taking it from people, middle class people, and giving it to poor people, and you know they howled, and so he backed down on it, and it showed a couple of things. It showed number one that he had taken advantage of it. I guess that's what really irked people a lot. He had put money away when he made all the money on the book royalties in 2009. He put all that money away for Sasha and Malia's college education under a 529 plan. So he had his socked away,
right?
And then to abolish it, it kind of showed that he really could. He can be very club-footed. I'm giving you a little, I'm throwing a bone to the people who are mad at me for being
about
Israel. But Greg, let me get one quick comment. Okay, what's up, Greg?
You're going off on this and everything else, and what nobody even brings to forepoint is the average amount of 529 is less than 20 grand. That ain't rich. That ain't even middle class. Over a bunch of years, a kid goes away to college, say at 18, that's about a grand a year people putting away. Figure that out. Less than 20 grand.
So your point is what?
The president put away 240,000 back in 2006. Is that right?
So you're saying he's a hypocrite?
Oh, without a doubt.
Okay. All right. Well, we got to the point there.
There is a picture of him.
All right, good. I'm going to go back to Israel for the last half hour of the program after the news.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
All right, here's kind of the typical message you all are sending me. This came to Geraldo at WABCRadio.com. Obama has run roughshod over our Constitution and this Congress for years now. He has no regard for the law of the land, particularly when it gets in the way of his agenda. So this perceived snub has your panties in a twist? Too bad. Obama spent his entire presidency crapping on our friends and sucking up to our enemies. He's made our once great nation a laughingstock, allowing the most evil powers on the planet to mock us, says Mark Horowitz. Well, Mark, I disagree, but that's just me. Here's Dan in New Jersey. What's on your mind, Dan? Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo.
Geraldo, yeah, I wanted to get back on Benghazi for a quick second because, sure, in my opinion, logic tells you that the problem with Benghazi is the administration did not want any noise coming out of the Mideast prior to the election, and that was the cover-up.
I think that is correct.
I don't think the issue was ever whether they could help them or not. They never tried to. So I think that's a disgrace on Obama and his administration.
Well, I think that the spin, I always said this, and I'm being proven right. I mean, I'm not bragging about being prescient or anything. I appreciate the call, Dan. But I always said that there was never any chance to help those guys. I mean, I got that right from the heart of the Pentagon, just career military officers who can't stand President Obama. They told me that there was nothing we could have done to help those people in Benghazi. That has always been the most emotional part of that entire story. That there was, why didn't we do more to help? The fact of the matter is, we could not have done any more than we did. We did everything possible. And that came from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. It came from everybody else. But the way the administration spun that, hold on a second. Sorry, I just got froggy there. The way the administration spun the story, and that because it was Bin Laden is dead, General Motors is alive, we have international terrorism on the run, and then you have this tragic incident that showed the Islamic insurgency. And when you think about Benghazi, it was kind of like the first step of the new Sunni Muslim extremist violence that we're seeing that later morphed into ISIS and all the rest of it. Now, in fact, you're seeing ISIS, people proclaiming to be allied with ISIS in Libya. So they definitely spun the Benghazi story to make it seem like it wasn't terrorism. I think that was a political act, and you're Dan Nicola absolutely right, in the eve of the election. But that's not what got people so upset about Benghazi. That's not why, if you ask anybody on the street and they tell you, why are you angry about Benghazi? Particularly people who watch my network, Fox News. Why are you angry about Benghazi? It always goes back to not about the political spin. It's not about, he made it seem like it was a spontaneous demonstration when they knew in their heart of hearts that it was a terrorist act pre-planned and all the rest of it. It was that we didn't help our people in distress, and that he had the blood of those four martyrs on his hands, the ambassador and the ambassador's aide and the two special forces guys. They were private contractors. They were there to guard our facilities. They came there to help. It was that he had blood on his hands. That's what Benghazi, that's the emotional part of Benghazi. That's why Benghazi is still a word. And when you associate, do a word association, you know I'm right. That this is why you hate Obama, because he was, I don't know, he was going to make a speech or something, or he was eating McDonald's or home watching TV. And some reports I saw were just outrageous that we had appropriate aircraft that were available that could have saved them, or we were watching through a drone in real time and we could have used the drone. It was just all BS. It was all BS. It was made up stuff. And there have been four hearings in Congress already. And everyone has come to that same conclusion. There was nothing that could have been done to help save those people. That's the fact. That's the fact. It's just a fact. You got to get over it. It's a fact. And now what? So now you have Trey Gowdy, who we like. Trey Gowdy, the former prosecutor from South Carolina. He's, he's on House Oversight Committee along with Daryl Issa. And they're doing this investigation, and now they've just gotten Hillary Clinton's acceptance of their demand that she testify. For what? Now we're going to do Benghazi all over again. Benghazi. You're going to have Republicans doing what? They are suing the president to abolish Obamacare for the 57th time. They are having Benghazi hearings in Washington, D.C. They're inviting Bibi Netanyahu to speak uninvited by the executive branch of the federal government, the Obama administration. And this is the Republican Congress that's supposed to be the new Republicans that shows how they can get stuff done for the American people. Really? You know what this is going to do? Obama's popularity has already ticked up from 40% to 50%. So now he's more popular than he's been in a couple of years. That popularity is going to carry through this year, 2015.
You have 17 Republicans running for president. They're going to start swiping at each other. And you know what's going to happen in 2016? You're going to have another Democrat in the White House. That's what you're going to have. Because Republicans can't get out of their own way. The leadership goes to the least common denominator. The cheap shot on Israel, cheap shot on Benghazi, cheap shot on Obamacare. It is so frustrating to someone who wants a Republican, a good sense business guy, maybe Jeb Bush, to run a credible campaign against Hillary Clinton and maybe win. It is so incredibly counterproductive. These people are opportunists, go for the cheap headline, don't give a damn really about the long-term health of either the party or the country. And maybe that's too harsh. Maybe I'm generalizing. And I mean, they're patriots, I'm sure. I'm sure they love their country as much as I do. But if I was Speaker of the House, what would I be doing? Would I be suing the president, pursuing that lawsuit? Would I be voting for the 57th time to abolish Obamacare, knowing that he's going to veto it? What's the point of it? Isn't the point to serve the American people? Is that naive of me to think that that's what someone elected to office should do? It just is so frustratingly nonsensical in every regard other than the cheap shot headline. Now, Trey Gowdy's going to bring Hillary Clinton to the House. She's testified before, we know that, as has every other official remotely connected to this. And now they're going to have a jousting match. And it's not going to be about anything about Benghazi that people really care about. Could you have saved them? Could you have saved them? No. We all agree. No, everybody, all the Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee, they already agreed. No, couldn't have saved them. So now we're going to do it for what? So you make her look like she's being picked on by a bunch of jerks on the Oversight Committee. It just, is that designed really to encourage young people to want to be in government and help the country out? You know what it's great for? It's great for talk radio. It's great for right-wing talk radio. Oh, there she is. There, Hillary. And it does nothing at all for either the party or the country. I mean, shame on them. I'm sorry, I haven't gotten to your calls. I will when we come back.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
You know, I'm seeing, it's an interesting, do you know Charles Blow, I'm going to get to your calls, I promise. And if I don't, I'm going to talk about Benghazi tomorrow. Charles Blow, the New York Times columnist, whose son was stopped at gunpoint by the Yale University cops. They're saying now, I've got to confirm it. I haven't confirmed it myself, that the cop who stopped him was black.
Yeah, I saw that. I couldn't figure out if that was true or not either, but I'd seen that, other people talking about it.
That, I mean, if that is true, and he left that out of the article.
I mean, that's huge.
I mean, that's pretty bad. I mean, that's pretty bad. If, it's an important detail, wouldn't you say, to leave out? I mean, it would have made a more nuanced dilemma. I'm not sure that the principle would have been different, that black children, because of the statistics and demographics, and remember the cops were responding to a criminal complaint, and that was the description of the alleged perpetrator of the crime, a young black man wearing a black hoodie and all the rest of that. But if you left out the fact that the cop that stopped his son was black, I mean, shame on him.
It's not as salacious when it's an African-American
officer.
It's
totally, totally not. Okay, so let's see. I'll take one here. Here's Bill in Brooklyn. Hey, Bill.
Yeah, how you doing, Geraldo? Let me just get you off speaker, please. All right, I don't know if you can hear me. You can hear me all right?
We got you fine, Bill.
All right. No, the Benghazi thing. I mean, you won your point about that we couldn't do anything. Get off it. It's what we didn't do prior to it. Hillary knew about it. It should have been more protected prior to the attack. And then the cover-up, we get it. We couldn't do anything. Get off it. You know, back they said that the hottest place in hell is for those in the middle. So be careful.
I'm not sure if you just said I condemned me to the hottest place in hell there, but that's not very nice. Joe in Long Island. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mr. I'd like to close out the show, but I'm Benghazi, okay? Two quick points, if I may.
Sure.
Your president and the Secretary of State flat out...
You mean our president?
Okay. I mean, I didn't have a choice in the matter, but yeah. Okay?
You had a
flat
choice.
Flat out lied when they tried to sell, he and Hillary and others, when he tried to sell this crap about this moron's video out in whatever. Okay? That's a lie. The flat-out lying, he knew it. She knew it, okay? He, as president of the United States, is lying, okay? Is that a high crime or a misdemeanor? I do not know, okay? Number one. Number two, we are Americans. We never, ever, ever don't stop trying to save our people. Even if we know that they're dead, we never leave a fallen warrior behind. It's just un-American, okay? And like I said, I can go on about
it. We didn't leave anybody behind. They were successfully evacuated, the survivors, at 5:30 in the morning. We didn't leave anybody behind.
I mean,
what you just said is just, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what the demagogues in Congress are feeding. That kind of BS. We don't leave anybody behind, the implication being that Obama left people behind. It's a lie. Absolutely a lie. Everybody was evacuated the next morning. Tragically, we had lost four by then, including the ambassador. Nobody got left behind. It's just... Don't you get it? Don't you get it? You've been sold this BS for 2 years now. Good point. The first point, good point. Should we have been better prepared? Did they spin it after the fact with the video? Good point. But to leave them behind, nonsense. It's nonsense. Nonsense. It's propaganda nonsense. But I tell you what, it's obvious a lot of people want to talk about Benghazi. I think it's interesting in terms of the political process and in terms of what I was just talking about, how the Republicans are setting themselves up to commit suicide again in the national election with this approach to governing. Sorry if I upset you today. Have a great day. I love you nevertheless. You're always welcome here.